another day. Another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream.
Hi, folks. This is Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's opinion and view of the changing world and the changing times and the things that we can all do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't, dictated as always, just about always anyway, during our 50-mile commute every day between Arlington and Frisco, Texas, from my mobile studio, which is in fact a little 2006 Jetta diesel car. And we're going to share yet another episode today. Today is episode 107, and I'm going to do something a little bit different today. I'm basically just going to, and this isn't like the one time I did it from home where I could sit down and read people's questions and comments directly. I have to do this kind of from my head. So if you hear me paraphrasing you and I don't get it quite right, I am paraphrasing you, and there is a distinct opportunity that you could think, oh, this is the email that I sent to him. And it may not be, in fact, your email that I'm mentioning if I don't mention you by name, because I get a lot of emails that are very, very similar, and I got a lot of emails yesterday after yesterday's show, positive, negative, and otherwise. I also got a lot of emails yesterday about other shows and other ideas and other suggestions and other topics. I thought it would be fun today is for me just to go through some of the comments that have been made on some shows, some questions that have been asked, all different things like that that have come directly from the audience, because if it's coming from you guys, then at least some portion of you have an interest in it. So that's what today's show is going to be about. The first thing I need to do is let you guys know four people did in fact win tactical slings, single point slings from SOE Tactical Gear yesterday. When the results started coming in, I was getting people with two different code words. One said SOE Tactical Gear, which is the name of John Willis' company and the sponsor of our show for this part of the contest, and the other was SOE Tactical Sling. I was certain that I said SOE Tactical Sling. It turns out I said both. So once I realized that's what was going on, and if you're one of the people that got an email from me just basically saying you got the words wrong, try again, you should have got another email from me saying, don't worry about it. And what I ended up doing was I took both answers, put everybody in the folder, and went through, and we got four winners yesterday, just like we had planned. I was actually surprised, though, how quick we got up to 60. So the next contest that I do with multiple offerings, I'm going to run higher than 60. I'm going to run up to maybe 80, maybe 90. Something like that. I mean, I'm still getting them this morning. I never want to go too low. I don't want to not give something away, you know, have to wait 2 days for respondents. But what I'm trying to do is I get a lot of emails from you guys that say, you know, I work evenings and I listen to you at night, or I download you at work but I can't listen to you there, and I listen to you on my drive home and there's no way until I get to the house that I'm going to be able to, so I'll never win. So I'm trying to make it where some people later in the day can win, and I'm trying to do it with multiple prizes so people still have a sense of urgency to try to be, you know, one of the early entrants. So, doing the best I can with it, folks. This is, you know, when somebody does it on the radio, they give it to caller number 10, and if you don't happen to have a phone right then, you lose. So, I'm being as democratic with this contest as I can. I'm trying to give everybody an opportunity to win. Maybe I'll start doing once a week a random drawing or something, just to give everybody an opportunity. We'll see. I'll try to keep working on that and do the best job I can for you. But four folks are getting single point slings, bungee slings from SOE Tactical Gear, valued at $45 a piece. So that's $180 that went out to our audience just yesterday alone from John Willis and the folks over at SOE Tactical Gear. So again, folks, if you're looking for some stuff like that for yourself or for a loved one this Christmas, please do them the respect of at least looking at their offerings first. One thing I can tell you, the quality of that stuff is absolutely outstanding. What I've heard competitors say about them, after doing a little more research as we've started working together with them, is that they overbuild their gear. That's a pretty high compliment. All right, anyway, let's get on with the show. I did a show yesterday called A Call to Arms, and I was pretty fired up. And gave you guys a lot of things that you could actually do, and told you I want you to do them. Okay? And I'd say about 99% of the response to that show has been absolutely phenomenal. People liked it. People are fired up. People are taking on at least some of those things. One person in the forum and a couple people by email said they felt like I was giving out Jack's rules and commandments for how to live according to Jack, to various forms of that. There's a couple things, and we had a discussion with one of these people on the forum, and I think he gets it now. I just want to realize that if one or two people emailed me and one guy put it on the forum, that probably a couple dozen people maybe feel that way at least, because for every person that actually takes an action, there's 10 people that feel the same way that don't do anything, which is part of why I did yesterday's show, because not enough people that feel the way that a lot of people who listen to the show feel. They feel that way, but they don't act. They don't do anything about it. So I was saying, hey, do something. But, I mean, a couple keys I want to point out yesterday. What I kept saying is, I want you to. I want you to. I want you to. Not I demand that you do, or I command that you do, or if you're going to be part of the survival podcast on our revolution, you must. These are the things that I want you to do. Now, when somebody says, I want you to do something, then you take that, or you leave it. All right. So, for instance, I said, I want you to make 5 calls a month to the 5 government officials that work for you. All right. I didn't say demand it. If you don't do it, I'm going to come to your house and punch you in the head. Right. So I want you to do this. Right. Now, I think it was clear about why I want you to do this. But I think you're going to be a little more clear really quickly and really simply today. And that is, right now, with the total of our national debt, you owe $440,000 as an American taxpayer. $440,000. When you add up the entire debt, public, private, you know, back-end, hidden books, unfunded obligations, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, $440,000. And you pay a pretty big, sizable chunk of taxes. 40 to 50% of your income every year goes to taxes. When you add up all the taxes, gas taxes, tolls, all the different ways, front end, back end taxes, initial cost of goods because they were taxed before they got to you, all of these different things. 40% at least is what the average American's paying in taxes now. All right? The Social Security that you never see that your employer pays, all that stuff. And your debt and your payments are being managed by 5 individuals more than anybody else in this country, all right, that are personally responsible for what you owe and what you pay. Those are your state representative, your state senator, your 2 federal senators, and your federal representative. So to me, if somebody has put you $440,000 into debt that you're responsible for and your family's responsible for going forward, if you're sending them 40% of your money and they have more control over how it's spent and managed or mismanaged than anybody else in the world, they work for you. And you just may want to call them, I don't know, 12 times a year to somebody managing that much of your money might be worth 5 minutes apiece to tell them how you feel. Here's the key to yesterday's show, and a guy in the forum pointed this out for me, and thank you, Mike, for doing that. I didn't tell you what to call them about, what issue to discuss with them. I didn't tell you how you feel about the issue. I told you you call them with issues you care about that affect you and tell them how you feel. All right? That's not bossing anybody around. That's not giving you my commandments. But what I am saying is I keep hearing people emailing me saying, we need to take our country back. We need a revolution. We need to do something. Okay, fine. The things I gave you yesterday are what you can do. From growing your own food, at least a little bit, to shopping locally, to calling the freaking 5 clowns that are pissing away your money, these are the things that you can do. Now you have to decide, do you want to do them? Or do you want to go back to bitching about them to other people that feel exactly like you do in a forum? I said, you need to go out and have relationships. I want you to form relationships with people that have dissenting views from you. And I want you to listen to them, and I want you to hear them. I want you to make them feel heard. And then instead of debating them, I want you to ask them questions that make them think, why do I feel the way that I feel? And engage them in conversation so that they are willing to then listen to and hear you so that both sides are heard and seek common ground. Now, can I make you do that? Absolutely not. But what's going to be more productive? What's going to have more of an impact? Are you going to go back to a forum about assault weapons and debate which one has a faster action or which match triggers better? Or are you going to go out and talk to somebody that doesn't think you should have a right to have that assault rifle and wants to take it away from you and understand why they feel that way and address their concern in a calm, rational, logical manner that explains to them how if your civil rights can be taken away, their civil rights can be taken away? The choice is yours. I simply told you, if you want to make an impact, what I suggest that you consider doing. All right, that was yesterday's show. Let's go on to something just completely different. One thing I said yesterday is the government can't do anything right. A guy named Poke This on the forum, who actually liked yesterday's show, actually disagreed with that. He said, let me tell you some things the government did right. And I responded to him on the forum, and you can go look and see the responses that I gave him. Well, let me give you just a brief snapshot of some of the things that he told me the government does properly. The Civil Rights Act and the Civil Voting Act that brought equality to mostly black Americans, but really all races of Americans other than white people in 75. Yeah. Let me see. The government did that right. First of all, we don't have a Department of the Civil Rights Act today. There's no giant government bureaucracy overseeing it. What they did is pass the law, finally. They got it through the Senate and the House, and he was right about that. It was a fight. All right? And it was done. And a law was passed. And then the federal government said, here's a law. Local law enforcement, go enforce it. This is now the law of the land. All right? Now, why did we have to pass a law that gave equal rights to people in the first place? Well, because we had laws that were denying equal rights to people in the first place. We had laws in place that allowed for other people to not have their rights. In other words, government passed one law to take away the effects of another law, ergo, government solved the problem that it first created by taking away what it did. Now, if government would approach every problem that they've created that way, we've caused this problem, we'll pass a law to take away what we did, we'll make it go away, and we won't bring it back, and we won't create a giant bureaucracy to do something, we would get somewhere. That was an action by government that was effective. But it wasn't run by government. That's my point. Individual communities were told, you can no longer do this to a class of people. Now, sort it out. And when you don't sort it out, the feds will come in and crack some skulls and go away. That's how this program was run. That's why it worked. All right, and it worked very, very well because of a lack of government involvement and because of government turning over something they already did. Here's another one, the GI Bill and Army College Fund, that type of stuff. Hey, let me tell you how this works, all right, because I experienced it myself. You go into what's called in-processing when you join the military. I joined the Army, went in. You get off a bus, don't have a uniform yet, don't have a haircut yet. You just show up, all right? In your head, I'm still a civilian yet. I haven't been indoctrinated yet. Next 3 days, you're going to get your ass indoctrinated. All right? You get off the bus. I got off the bus at like 1 o'clock in the morning. I start screaming at you the second you got off the bus. And what you have to understand is anybody that you interacted with that was part of the military up to this very second spoke to you with respect. You are now a maggot. And you have 3 days of being a maggot. And you are yelled and you are screamed at just about every 5 minutes. And if you're not doing something wrong, they'll make something up so that they can yell at you. I'm not knocking that system. That system is extremely effective. It's designed to reshape a civilian-minded individual into a soldier or a sailor or an airman or a marine or to a Coast Guard member. It's what it's for. And it works really well for that. But it's during this period that you're asked to contribute part of your salary for 18 months at the time. I don't know what it is today. And you put money into a system designed to fund your college in the future. And the return of investment's great on it, okay? It really is. But that's the mental state you're in. And your only counseling is, this is a good thing, you should do it. Well, you're confused and tired, and what you got to realize, some of you folks that are in your 30s and 40s, they're thinking, it's not that bad. They're kids. They're 17, 18, 19-year-old kids mostly in this environment. Most of them have never been away from home. Most of them, 2 days ago, mom was making them breakfast downstairs and getting them out of bed so they wouldn't be late. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Again, I wish more kids would go in the military. I'm just saying that's the environment they're in. So what happens? A lot of people that are not qualified for college, that are never going to go to college, absolutely know they're never going to go to college, sign up for this thing and contribute to it. And the program remains solvent by the tens of thousands of veterans who never use a dime of their benefits and are not entitled to 1 cent of their investment back unless they follow the exact rules and programs and type of institution that they're told they have to go to. But I'll tell you what, overall, I'll even say it works. And it is part of government. But what's it part of? It's part of running the military. That's a constitutional responsibility of our government. Government gets that right because they have to. If the government doesn't get the military right, the government doesn't get to continue to bilk us for all our tax dollars and piss away all our money. So they got to get the military right. Alright? So those are just some things that came out of yesterday's show. Moving on. I've received a couple emails questioning the validity of this and a couple emails telling me this was going on. And I hate to be the one to tell you this, but it is legitimate. It is true, and it did happen. There's a little organization called Manna Storehouse that provides organic produce and meats and vegetables and things like that. To anybody that wants to buy from them. I believe they're in Illinois. I'm not sure if it's Illinois or Indiana, but it's somewhere up in that, you know, north Midwest part of the country. And family-owned operation, kids, mom, dad, sitting at home, SWAT team, guns drawn, kick the door down and come into the house. Hold them at gunpoint for most of the day. Do not allow them to make a phone call. Do not allow them to go get legal counsel. And do not tell them why they're there or what they're being charged with. After most of the day passes, one SWAT team leads and a new SWAT team comes in. The first SWAT team is real nasty, abusive, bad guys, black hats. Right? The new SWAT team comes in and plays the good cops. Eventually, they do leave and they tell them they're being charged with, possibly being charged with, selling produce without some type of procedure or not, some type of little red tape bullshit, all right? And now they're going through prosecution. But this was all about selling food directly to a consumer that knew what they were buying, knew who they were buying it from, and chose to do business with that company. In other words, your neighbor, Farmer Joe, has chickens. He says, Tom, want some chickens? And you say, Joe, love some chickens. Tom, and he says, Joe says to you, I'll tell you what, I'll sell you 5 chickens for $20. You say, great, can you clean them for me? I don't know how to clean a chicken. And Joe says, no problem. So Joe, like any good farmer, whacks 10 chicken heads off, plucks them, gets them ready to go, packs them up, puts them in a box, brings them over to you and says, here's your 10 chickens, and you pay them. And then the freaking state government comes in and puts a gun to Joe's head because he didn't follow a certain sanitary regulation when he prepared your chicken. That's what happened to his family. This is so highly linked to the kind of crap that I've been talking about with Monsanto. And this family has a blog, and they're talking about what's going on, and I'll link to it, and you can go look at it. But if you want to be afraid of our government, if you want to go into that tinfoil hat brigade stuff that I'm going to talk about here just in a second, in a way I was taken out of context for the Alex Jones comment, this is the place to go. The hell with Halliburton. The hell with all this FEMA's going to put us all to death and throw us in furnaces. This nonsense. You want to control a society. There's 2 things that if you can control, you have complete control of the society. One is money, and one is food. If you control money and food, you can control everything. Well, the Federal Reserve, which is a very small group of international banks, control our money supply. They manipulate it through our Congress. They fund elections. They ensure the success of the people that are supposed to be regulating them. And a very small group of companies are patenting life forms and taking actions like this to prevent direct sales from the producer to the consumer. Because that's what this was about. This was about a farm producing and selling directly to a consumer, circumventing a distribution channel, which is where most of the money is made in food. It's made in the distribution. It's made in production and distribution. And when I say production, it's made by the seed manufacturer, the herbicide manufacturer, the selling of farming equipment, the requirements, the taxation, all the bills that the farmers pay. And then it's made in the distribution channel, and the farmer that produces it gets the smallest piece. This is anger that the producer went directly to the consumer for too long and was too successful with the model. That's not a conspiracy. That's happening. No one's lining up anybody on a red line and a blue line in a train station to incinerate them the way some of you freaks, and you're freaks if you think that's what's going on right now, think is going on, right? You got a foil hat. I'm sorry. I'm not saying it could never happen. I'm saying it's not in motion. Just let it go, right? But this family really did have police officers with AR-15s, fingers, you know, alongside the trigger, not on the trigger, guns pointed at their children because they sold food to a consumer. That happened very recently in our country. That should concern you. Now, the Alex Jones thing. The other day I was doing a podcast, I don't even remember the exact particulars of what I was talking about, but I was getting a little bit of the conspiracy stuff myself. And I said, I don't want to go all Alex Jones on you guys, or, you know, go all tinfoil hat. And somebody sent me an email and said, would you please stop referring to people that listen to Alex Jones as automatically going in a tinfoil hat brigade? I said, huh? That's not what I said. All right. Tinfoil hats. Alex Jones is Alex Jones. If you listen to Alex Jones, here's my opinion of Alex Jones. Alex Jones is an immensely talented radio personality. His ability to deliver a message is exceptional. His ability to speak is exceptional, and he brings in some very credible guests to discuss. If I were as successful at broadcasting as Alex Jones, I probably wouldn't do anything else other than broadcast. All right? Some of the things that Alex discusses are so spot on, so dead on, and so like-minded with me that it's scary. Some of the things that Alex purports to be fact are way out on the fringes of reality, deep into the tinfoil hat brigade, as I called it and as I've created, and that's what it is for my audience. Alex serves his audience, I serve mine. Now, this individual pointed out that I might bring a lot of people over into my audience that would listen to me and Alex both, and I would be hurting myself if I said things that might offend them. Well, if I worried about saying things that might offend somebody, my show would suck butt. And no one would freaking listen to me because I probably offend every listener at least once every day because my desire is to make you think. So tough freaking nookies. Alright? That's all I'm saying. But if you listen to Alex Jones and like his show, that does not mean that you're a tinfoil hat wearing freak. But if you think, if you honestly believe that our government already has a plan in place to incinerate 80% of our population, yeah, you go in the brigade, at least in my opinion. But you are entitled to your own opinion. So is Alex. That's the entire premise of my show. So if you're an Alex Jones listener, hey, man, keep on listening to Alex because he's right about a lot of things. Just temper, you know, what he says against the, you know, the world of reality. Okay, totally unrelated subject about practical matters. It's been a subject being discussed on the forum between me and basically one other person about winter gardening in a greenhouse and how to keep your greenhouse warm during the winter without using heat or electricity. Now, when I was a kid, we had a greenhouse in Pennsylvania. And the way we kept it warm in the coldest parts of the winter was with a couple very high wattage light bulbs. We had two big 100 watt bulbs, the kind that you clamp onto something. And they would keep the temperature high enough in there on the nights where it was cold that we didn't lose plants. And we only ran them on those nights, and that was pretty much what we did. It was also attached to the house, which I'm sure helped some because there's some radiant heat through the wall. What I'm dealing with now, and what I've been talking to people about now, is, you know, dealing with a freestanding greenhouse, particularly these pop-up ones from a place like Springhouse. And I bought one this year. And one of the things that I've heard suggested many times, and suggested myself on the show, is using like a black trash can or a black rain barrel, filling it with water, and using it as a heat sink. Well, suggested it, didn't do it. Tried a little project, and one thing I tried to do this year was grow some pole beans. And it got down to last week sometime here, it got down to 31 degrees overnight. My pole beans died. Everything else in the greenhouse made it, except for one poor little tomato plant that I was trying to coax through, and I think I decided that this is not the time to either try to grow tomatoes in a hothouse, at least not the variety I was trying to grow. But everything else made it, but it looked a little, it wasn't real happy about what it went through, but, you know, 2 days later, it all came back with the beans dead. So this weekend, knowing that this week was again going to get very cold, I went out and bought a 32-gallon Rubbermaid black plastic trash can for $12 at Target. So it was a pretty low investment. I stuck it in the back corner of the greenhouse where we get hit by the sun, and filled it up with water, put the lid on it, and stuck a thermometer inside it, a little one I could read from the outside that I use for like managing some of my reptile containers and things like that. Very, very accurate little electrical thermometer. And this morning when I went down there, the temperature of the water was 44 degrees, and the overnight low last night on our outside thermometer was about 27 degrees. In fact, I'll tell you how cold it was last night. It suns up, day has started, it's 31 right now. When I went down to the greenhouse this morning, the water temperature was 44 degrees, and when I opened the door of the greenhouse and walked inside, it was noticeably warmer in there. In fact, it was cold enough outside that it felt damn right comfortable in the greenhouse. And the only difference was it was actually colder outside. Right? It actually sleeted and snowed on the outside of the greenhouse last night a little bit. And it was warmer inside. In fact, the last time I went to 31, the inside, like little water droplets, condensation that formed on the side of the greenhouse, on the inside were frozen. Little ice all over the inside of the greenhouse. Today, quite a bit colder, no ice, water. So that action of just a 32-gallon black garbage can sitting in there absolutely helped sustain higher temperatures during the evening on a very, very cold night for North Texas. 27 is pretty damn cold around here. So I'm convinced it works. I'm going to go spend another $12 and buy a second one because I think two of them will even be more effective. So that method is now proven. And folks, you know, a lot of things are things I postulate, and I'm learning with you guys as we go on some of this stuff, and I'll always admit when I'm wrong. And when I thought I could grow pole beans in a greenhouse in December and January, I was wrong. I'm going to try planting snow peas and see if I can pull that off. And when I said, I think if you do this thing with the rain barrel, it'll work, I was right about that, and it is working. And I now can certify for a fact that that will help you sustain temperatures, and it's a very inexpensive way to do it. The individual I was discussing this with had another suggestion, and that was that you add a little bit of antifreeze to the water. That by adding antifreeze to the water on the super cold nights when it's actually, you know, gets cold enough for the water to drop to freezing, it won't freeze. It'll be faster and more quick to warm up the next day. I think it's a good idea. One caution, folks, being serious about this. Recently I had a little incident with my cat we talked about. He got bit in the face and all, and I am a cat lover, and we have two cats now, and the one cat that stays in the house is a little female cat. We love her, and if this didn't happen, I wouldn't have her in our family. So I guess, you know, long term everything happens for a reason, but about 2 years ago, we had a very large male tomcat, just a wonderful cat named Victor. About 22 pounds, huge, huge tomcat. And some way or another, he ended up drinking antifreeze. And I don't know if some piece of shit did it to kill him, because there are people that don't like cats and that will use that method, or if there was just a leak somewhere and he drank it, but he died. And he died a miserable, horrible death. And we eventually, after considering treatment options, and the vet just basically saying his kidneys were shot, decided to have him put down. But the effects of that were miserable. And all I can say is, if you ever buy antifreeze for any purpose, especially something like this, buy the eco-friendly stuff. It's like 2 to 4 cents a gallon more. All right, even if you don't buy the eco-friendly stuff, you can buy stuff that's like designed so animals won't consume it. All right, it's got a bittering agent in it, and that bittering agent costs like 2 cents a gallon. All right, do not use antifreeze that tastes sweet, conventional, non-environmentally friendly antifreeze. Please don't do that, because I want you to understand something, that enough to kill a cat is your car leaks. The cat walks through the puddle and licks its paws, and it's just a gruesome, horrible death that no animal deserves. And honestly, I'm the kind of person that after I've seen it, if someone told me, yeah, I use antifreeze to kill animals, even a freaking coyote, and I loathe coyotes, I'd put the person at minimum in a hospital if they were standing in front of me and told me that. It is one of the most despicable things that any human being can do. So please just consider that. I really mean that. It's a heartfelt thing because of personal experience. Here's another one I've been hearing a lot lately, another totally unrelated subject. It's about investments, moving money to cash, and the buzzword being used now, and I talked to so many financial advisors last year when I was interviewing them, trying to find a decent one. They use this word. This is a new buzzword of the century for these jackasses that just throw your money into a mutual fund, collect their fee, and don't ever do anything after that. Not timing the market. Don't time the market. Don't time the market. I'm actually going to help set up a podcast today for a client of our company who's a financial advisor that I'm going to hire. And this is what he told me about that. If I can't help you time the market, then why the hell do you pay me? Makes sense to me. That's why I'm hiring the guy. Now, he's not talking about options trading and making a trade every day. But you know what? As I said yesterday, this financial crisis we're in, it's only a surprise to the people with their heads in the sands. All summer long, we knew this was coming. And I'm telling you, I talked to enough financial people that I was like, you know what, I want to move some money. And I want to move it to a safe place. And basically all of them said, you're so young, don't worry about it. You must time the markets, people. Right, at least major, giant shifts in the market. And when you see the market at an all-time high, and you're thinking, everybody's making money but me, it's got to be time to buy. That seems like common sense. I don't call that common sense. I call that uncommon stupidity. You don't buy high and sell low. You buy low and sell high. That's common freaking sense. But when the market's sitting at 14,400, and there's fundamental flaws all through the economy, and subprime mortgages are starting to crumble, and unemployment numbers are starting to climb, and interest rates are starting to just fall. That's not even, to me, timing the market. That's stepping out of the way of a freight train. So my view is you must time the market to a degree. And that is when you're at the top of a swing, it's time to pull back with some of your things and get a little bit more conservative. And Mr. Jim Wiggum, who is the gentleman I'm going to be setting this up for, his view is there's times you just move into cash. And his philosophy of investing is this. You determine how much money you're going to save every year, how you're going to save it, what age you want to retire at, and how much money you're going to need based on how long you think you're going to live. With that, you calculate a necessary rate of return. Let's say your necessary rate of return is 8%, and that this year you made 24%. Well, at that point, unless it's really a good time to be heavily invested, why take a big risk? You've just covered 3 years worth of returns. So what you need to be doing now is looking at how can I be conservative and protect that and wait for the right opportunity. All right? So what I want you to understand, this is an important thing to understand here, folks. One of the most important things that I can ever teach you, and I'm not a financial advisor, but this is something that most people do not know. And financial advisors sell to this lack of knowledge. What they tell you is, well, we put you in this mutual fund. You are diversified across 100 stocks. And we know the companies, and we only invest in good, solid companies with solid rates of return and historical profit. Blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And instead of you managing your money, you take a top, smart investment person that's all they do is manage that. You let them manage your money. But the problem is, if you're in a fund that buys mid-cap stocks, That manager, no matter how much they know that mid-cap stocks are bad right now, that the recession's coming, it's going to hit them, and they're all going to tumble on some economic indicator, can't move your money out. He has to sit there and let the freight train run over you and him both. And when your fellow investors in that fund start freaking out and calling in and selling theirs, your fund value just starts dropping at the same time. And there's nothing that can be done to stop it. All right? There's no freedom within the fund to move to a different class of investments. Your investment manager of your fund can't go, you know what? For 2 months, we're going to put all this money in cash. We're going to ride out the crash, and we're going to go back in. That's what you would expect. Can't do it. Not allowed to. In fact, it's illegal for him to do it. The other thing is that expert, a lot of these funds, that expert is some graduate student that goes there, and he's given that fund to actually manage. The overseer that's supposed to be the experienced guy has very little day-to-day action. And what's this all about? It's all about 1.5% of your money as a management fee, whether you win or lose. So that's my thoughts on that stuff there. So I think that wraps up today. There's probably some more stuff I could do, but we're about 35 minutes into it, and good time to wrap things up today, and I'll come back with a solid subject tomorrow and some practical stuff again. But hope you're enjoying the show. Please continue to give me feedback, positive and negative both. Even if I disagree with you, I respect you. I respect every person that gives me the time to listen to me, email me, talk to me, talk on my forum, post on my blog. Respect all of you immensely. In fact, the guy that said I was bossing him around yesterday, when I responded to him on the forum, I gave him one positive karma point, gave him a little karma boost on the forum, because I respected his willingness to speak his mind. That's how I really feel. It's not just something I say, it's something I mean. I value all of you as a community, and every day I receive emails from people saying things like, my wife and I listened to you and found that inspirational. Thank you. I'm making smart changes in my life because of you. We're expanding our garden to double its size this spring because we've realized what people like Monsanto are doing thanks to you. And it makes this show the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. I will fulfill one commitment to you guys. I will always try to do my best. Sometimes I'll screw up. Sometimes I'll make mistakes. And I'll always try to admit it when I do. But I will commit myself to making this show informative, insightful, engaging, and at times I commit to you that I will piss you off and make you disagree with me vehemently. Because if I don't do that to you at least once, I'm not doing my freaking job. There's too much dumbed down society today. There's too much nodding heads in agreement. There's too little dissension with the status quo. And my job is to make you think. And sometimes I might even fake it a little bit just to make you think. This has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live the life you want if times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.